right, good afternoon, everybody. I'm glad some people have stuck around to the end of the session. We'll finish things up here, and you can move on to whatever is coming next for you. My name is Mitch Hunter. I'm working on my PhD in agronomy at Penn State, and I'm going to be talking about using cover crop mixtures to manage weeds. So I don't really have to ask this room, you know, why cover crops, definitely, or even really why mixtures. I think about every talk has looked at mixtures, but to tell you why we are looking at mixtures, first of all, they're the hot thing with farmers, so we're trying to understand how they work. And then second of all, we've also, as a project, looked into the ecological literature around how mixtures function together. And so we've specifically referred to this paper by Hooper et al. From 2005 as kind of a guide. And to orient you here, this is theoretical data that they put together to illustrate the relationship between species diversity and an ecological function, in this case, plant biomass production. So we've modified that slightly for our purposes, and we've got our number of species in the mixture here, and then we go to whatever function you're talking about here. So theoretically, this is what we'd expect. At a low level of diversity, how to interpret this chart. So each one of these little dots would be a single treatment, and so for each of these species level, you have a range. And then the larger circles, you also have an average for that species level. So what we hypothesize, or what this shows, is that at a low level of diversity, you have a certain range and average. And then as you add diversity to your system, you both increase the average, and you also shrink the range closer towards the top of, you know, high-functioning level of whatever service you're looking at. So our hypothesis is that we'll see this same dynamic within our cover crop mixtures, for any given function that might be weed suppression or might be nitrogen supply or some of the many functions that we're all interested in looking at with mixtures. And so we're not just looking at this in terms of adding species and getting more function, we're also looking at it in terms of adding species and getting multifunctionality. So as you add more species, perhaps you can do more with your mixtures. And I won't go into this in detail, this is just to illustrate that we have people studying the effects on soils, on plants, on insects, and we're trying to look at this in an integrated way and trying to compare what a monoculture might look like to what a mixture might look like and see how the multifunctionality of the system changes as you add more species to your cover crop mixtures. So today I'm just going to be focusing on weed suppression. I'll come back to multifunctionality at the end, but we'll be mostly diving into what we've seen from 2 years of data on weed suppression. And what are the questions that we're interested in? Well, we know what we want cover crops to do as far as weed suppression, at least as far as we're not rolling these cover crops, we're not trying to do no-till with them. We're just trying to make sure that weeds aren't a problem in that cover crop window. And this is important for us as an organic project. I think it's important for any kind of system. You don't want that cover crop window to be an opportunity for weeds to reproduce and increase the weed seed bank. So that's what our goal is. And we want to understand how that happens. So first of all, does cover crop species diversity enhance weed suppression? That's one question. And second, what are the temporal dynamics of cover crop weed suppression by competition? I want to stress we only looked at competition as a mechanism. We didn't look at allelopathy or any of the other mechanisms that people have suggested for cover crop weed suppression. So those are the two questions I'm going to try to answer in the next 10 minutes or so. The context is an organic feed grain crop rotation that's common for organic dairy farms in the Pennsylvania and the Northeast. It's a corn silage soybean wheat rotation, and there's two windows there where you can plant cover crops, but I'll be focusing today entirely here. Fall and winter wheat, we get those planted sometime in August, and that gives us a pretty good opportunity to plant a real mixture. At the other window, when you're planting mid to late September, there's not much that's gonna come up for you and really do well over the winter, except in our experience, rye, or surely some of the other cereals that do a good job too. So that's a bit of the context. It is a tilled system since it's an organic system, and we have a randomized complete block design with fairly large plots that come out to about 12 hectares in total. Okay, so how do we make our mixtures? Well, we started with six core species. We have our two legumes, red clover and Austrian winter pea. We have two brassicas, canola and forage radish. And then we have two grasses, cereal rye and oats. So rather than do a full factorial of this and just bury ourselves in treatments, what we decide to do is create functional mixtures out of these six basic species. So I'll try to describe how we did that. Using this chart, where on the y-axis I have the percent of the monoculture seeding rate. I think this is the easiest way to illustrate how I put these together, or how the team put these together. So obviously, for each of our monoculture cover crops, we planted them at 100% of the monoculture seeding rate. And these rates are just kind of standard rates that we got either out of our agronomy guide, or talking to farmers, or talking to some of our other collaborators. So from these six species, we built our functional mixtures. And the first one is the three species nitrogen supply mixture. So it's got a heavy complement of clover and pea, and then a lower rate of rye. Then we have the three species weed suppression mixture, which has a lot of oat and rye, and then clover included as well, to see if we can get a little bit of nitrogen supply at the same time. We have a four species mixture that's designed to improve services for pollinators. So you can see here, we've added in a pretty significant seeding rate of canola. And if the timing is right, canola can be a really strong floral resource in the spring in our region. And then finally, we have our six species mixture where all of these are put together. So we looked at the performance of these cover crops and the weeds with pretty standard biomass sampling techniques. We sampled 3/4 meter square subplots, averaged them. We sorted the samples to both cover crop species and weed species. And we did this both in November, around the time of the first killing frost, and then in May, just prior to termination. We also, to answer our second question, we did some sampling to assess the temporal dynamics of cover crop weed suppression. So what we did is a series of repeated fall and spring measures in the same spot, went back to the same spots in the field, and we did two things. First, we estimated percent cover at that spot, both in the field using a frame, and then with photography, depending on the conditions. And we also did percent light attenuation. So our system here was LIGHTCORE quantum sensors. We had ambient sensor above the canopy and a line quantum sensor below the canopy. And using the difference, we could calculate light attenuation by that canopy. So to get into what we saw, here's the cover crop biomass. So that's our y-axis. And to kind of go through the monocultures, we see pretty widely varying performance in the fall from the legumes. The clover really comes on slow for us in the fall. The pea can do a lot better. Both of the brassicas were kind of intermediate in their biomass, and then the grasses were intermediate to high. And in case you're not familiar with the species or the region, both the radish and the oat will winter kill for us, and the pea will winter kill. If it gets too mature, or if the winter, if it gets too mature in the fall, if it starts flowering, or if the winter is just too harsh. So if I add on the mixtures, you can see that the mixtures were actually relatively even in the fall. We have a good complement of the biomass from all the species we planted, with the major caveat that we didn't get much in the way of red clover biomass. It's down here, highly suppressed in our mixtures. I also wanted to say that I'm focusing on the fall, because that's where we've seen real weed problems in our mixtures. At least where we are in the last 2 years, winter comes through and knocks out most everything. We don't have really noxious winter annuals in these fields. We don't have horseweed and high populations in these fields, and the sorts of things that could be a bigger problem come spring. So I'm just focusing on the fall. All right, so that's how the cover crops did. And how did this come out as far as the weeds? Well, now we have weed biomass on the y-axis, and we saw definitely fewer weeds on average in the mixtures. So if you throw the monocultures up there, you can see a clear trend as you go from the legumes to the brassicas to the grasses. You're getting better weed control. And then with the mixtures, you're getting weed control that looks pretty similar to the best monocultures. So I think there's a couple lessons there. One, you don't need the mixture to get the good weed control. You can put out the rye, you can put out the oat. There are lots of species out there that will do it on their own. But maybe on the better side of the ledger, when you do put a mixture out there, if it's got the right conformation, you can get really good weed control, even though you've got other species in there that maybe aren't that competitive on their own, and maybe are doing something else in the field to provide other services. So quickly, I did mean separation with a mixed model, log transform data and two-piece comparison, and it really just confirms what you're seeing from the box plots, at least the general trend. So how does this refer back to our original hypothesis? I'll remind you of the shape of this curve, and then I constructed a relative weed suppression metric just within the confines of this data set. So on the next curve, you'll see that 1 is the best in this data set, 0 is the worst in this data set. And the shape of the curves is very similar to what you see in the ecological literature as kind of a theoretical response or theoretical relationship between number of species in the mixture and your function. So we are seeing, at least for the function of weed suppression, we're seeing kind of the expected response. And it's interesting to note that you can apply something that was developed out of the natural system into this agricultural system and actually use it to drive a function. So that's my first take-home point. Cover crop mixture, species diversity, so having diverse mixtures, did increase the average weed suppression, or reduce the average weed biomass, however you'd like to think about it. So why? Why does this happen? What's the mechanism? Getting back to the temporal dynamics, the take-home here is that early fall ground cover, or early growth, is really the key functional trait. So on the x-axis, I have the early fall percent cover. 5 to 6 weeks after planting, go out and estimate the ground cover. On the y-axis, I have the fall weed biomass. And you can see that for both years, there's a strong linear relationship between more ground cover, fewer weeds. And the interesting thing to note is not just that we have this relationship. That might be obvious. But since we had those multiple time points in the fall and the spring, we could compare which was the best predictor of the ultimate weediness. And in every case, it was the first predictor. The first measurement that we took was the best predictor of the weediness that fall or that spring. So I really think that that points to the notion that it's the early competitiveness of the cover crop coming out of the ground, suppressing germination, suppressing growth, that gives you your weed suppression. So that, just to illustrate how this might look, here's a fall mixture doing a great job of, you know, filling the niche space, keeping weeds from germinating. And in contrast, you have a clover that leaves a lot of soil uncovered and creates a lot of opportunities for the weeds to come in. So second take home, it's that period shortly after planting that matters most. Rapid growth is key. And now just to expand it out a little bit again, I've been talking about weed suppression, but if we want to look at the whole picture, I'll just remind you that looking at our biomass data and zooming in on the mixtures, we got pretty even biomass. So you had good weed suppression for all four of these treatments. And in 3 out of 4, you have a pretty significant complement of legume biomass. So maybe just for that one additional function at least of nitrogen fixation, you can see that you can get weed suppression out of a mixture and also get some multifunctionality. So that's my final take-home message. I just want to thank my co-authors, funders at NIFA and NSF, and our huge project team, and thank you all for your attention, and I'm happy to take questions. That's a really good question. No, we sampled those at multiple time points, that would have, you know, impacted the development over the season. And what I showed was our visual estimate of cover. And that's a better predictor because in your visual estimate, you can say it's 30% cover crop, it's 3% weeds, and the rest is ground. And so you can distinguish the two, where the light bar doesn't distinguish the two, obviously, between weeds and cover crops. So it's just a little bit of a messier relationship. It's still a predictor, it's still a significant predictor, but the percent cover is a better, much better one. Steven?
I guess I'm wondering if you could decompose the monoculture treatment, because it just seems like looking at the data sets, you're trying to link that to this functional relationship of multiple species, but I suspect that actually the top of the collection of data points in that figure was all just dominated by cereal rye, so your monoculture rye would essentially have equivalent performance as all the other multiple species.
That is accurate. So, like I said, you don't need the mixture to get the weed suppression, right? So these up here, the oat and rye, the very best ones, are found in the monoculture, and they're also what's driving the mixtures. I didn't show, I guess I did show the biomass, and it's, you see a little bit of grass dominance in the fall, and you see a ton of grass dominance in the spring. Anywhere there's rye, all of a sudden your mixture has everything there, most of the, you know, except for the things that winter kill, but you're really looking at a rye stand. So I think this, you know, it's not a factorial experiment. It's not full replacement. So there's some artifacts in here of how we put this together. And I think if we had this whole factorial experiment, we'd have fuller ranges. We wouldn't have kind of a spottiness in the range. But I think that it would kind of hold true, because as you add species to the mixture, you're necessarily going to dilute the worst ones. And what we've seen is that you don't have to have the full rate of the best ones to get their benefit. So you can dilute the worst ones with a lower rate of the best ones, and you're still going to kind of climb up this curve as you go to the right. Yeah? Oh, do we have time? Okay, one more.
So how do the prices of those mixtures compare to one or two for the grower? Is it something that's feasible to them, or is something just more kind of practical?
I had the price data in here before, and I took it out for simplicity. Some of them certainly are more expensive. We have some more expensive cover crops in here, like the winter pea, large seeds, and higher costs. So there would be some trade-offs, certainly, from a grower's perspective there. But I think that if you really did a full kind of search in the range of seed of species that are available in seed costs, I think you could do a good job constructing functional mixtures that don't break the bank.
All right, let's thank our speaker. Thank you. I'd like to make a